There are teams that you can predict. You can plot on a graph of form, depth, and season-by-season expectation. And then there's Scotland, a nation that's climbed to the summit of the Five Nations twice within our lifetime. 1990, when Murrayfield sung and England was stopped in their tracks, and 1999, when, with a Scott Gibbs Wembley assist, Scotland were the final rightful Five Nations champions. After the rise, though, has come the wait. Not absence, never absence, but perhaps something a little bit more Scottish. Days of brilliance, victories that shake giants, performances that make no sense after the week before, or looking back on it the week after. These are teams that can dazzle Paris, stun Twickenham, unsettle Dublin, and then leave their own supporters staring into the cold February Edinburgh air, wondering what just happened. Unpredictable, inconsistent, capable of anything, glory, heartbreak, sometimes in the same afternoon. But Murrayfield endures, with a memory of Hastings, Logan, Armstrong and Weir, wondering when they will see their like again. This is Scotland in the Six Nations Championship, and this is the Sporting Almanac Podcast.
And I've never heard such an emotional rendering of Flower of Scotland as we've just heard.
Where to begin with Scottish rugby?
Do we have to talk about Scotland right now?
Just past the ceremonial halfway point in the tournament.
Yeah.
And this would have been probably more fun for you and I had we recorded it before the tournament started. Or maybe it wouldn't have been.
Yeah, it probably would have been.
Maybe it would have been more fun to record it after round one.
I tell you what though, speaking about round one, Scotland will be kicking themselves that they lost to Italy because they are currently second in the table. That is their only defeat. Granted, they've still got France to come.
And Ireland
to come. Yes, yeah, so they've still got their two hardest games to come. But it's a hell of a platform to put yourself on if you'd just beaten Italy.
Yeah, they have France at home as well. And you'd think if France win that game, then the Grand Slam is all but theirs with England going there on the last game.
It's probably all but theirs either way. But I don't know, Murrayfield with a chance of the title if they'd have been Italy, I don't know. It's a shame they didn't. I mean, they still got a chance at the title, obviously, if they beat France, but it's a bit more of a long shot.
Yes.
But still.
Yeah, they would have to hope for a favour from us and beat Ireland in Ireland, which I don't think they've done for an age. Because Scotland, and this is the last half harsh thing I'll say before we try it. No, it won't. It won't be the last. Who am I kidding? We're gonna talk about Scotland generally, but then we'll say some nice things about them. But they are mid-table fodder.
Because when they're at their best, it's maintaining that standard that they can't do. They can be absolutely incredible. I mean, for God's sake, in this tournament so far, they've lost to Italy and they've smashed England all over the place.
And then scraped past Wales.
England were second best by a country mile. Scraped past Wales, yeah. Needing a incredible piece of play from Finn Russell, that kickoff.
Yeah, it was so good.
To get them close and then got them over the line. It brilliant from him, obviously, but it's crazy. To go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I
that's sort of why they are what they are.
I noted down that they are the Belgium of rugby. They look nice.
A fair
they're talented,
description.
But they never threaten.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
I can't really add much more to that.
Do you know what I mean? Because they produce some. And also, from the outside looking in, and I know it's a topic of hot debate currently, so it's kind of flavour of the month to wade in on this discussion, but I do think that they are miscoached. I think that Townsend has like this main man kind of what's the right phrase?
Aura syndrome.
No, like a syndrome.
Somewhere in between.
Yeah, like a syndrome. it's like he can't let anyone be the star of the show. Like he has to assert his authority and dominance all the time. And like what I mean by that, and this might be misplaced, Scottish fans might be like, no, we like him, he's done very well, and there's a truth to that in terms of certain performances, but like he dropped Russell ages ago now, all over basically ego. Now you might say that's paid off, look how good Finn Russell is now. That's one way of like spinning that.
Yeah,
the other way of saying it is you disadvantaged yourself for a prolonged period of time by not playing your most talented player and finding a way to manage him, And then they're now doing the same thing to Blair Kinghorn, who to me, Jack, to me, is a Galactico of rugby. Like the Real Madrid of rugby love this guy. He plays for Toulouse week in, week out, but apparently can't get in the Scottish back three because Glasgow are playing well.
Mm. With any sort of coaching, you are always judged by results, ultimately. And in international rugby, you don't have many results to be judged off. There's only really the Six Nations, Summer and Autumn Internationals, and the World Cup. And that is pretty much all you're judged off. It's not a huge amount of games. And you look at recent games, would they have done better? You can obviously make the argument in hindsight for Finn Russell, saying, is he a better player now because of decisions that were made in the past? But I don't know.
I'm not convinced. I think a very good coach, a very good coach, an Andy Farrell, you know, even an Eddie Jones of years gone by, or a Galtier, like as if you want a contemporaneous one. I just think they would find a way to ensure that their best players are always in their team. They would adapt their management style. And maybe I don't know. Blair Kinghorn played against Wales. People found his performance underwhelming. I don't know. I was there, and I thought he looked very good. But I'm no expert. He didn't play against England, and obviously Scotland ran riot. But England were terrible, and also down to 10 men, down to 14 men very quickly in the game, and then down 14 men for a prolonged period of the game anyway when they got the red. And so like that scoreline doesn't flatter to deceive, but I don't think it's predicated on selection, is what I'm saying. He didn't play against Italy, and that didn't go so well. And obviously, we're talking about one
that
man.
Was sort of what I was referring to, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about one man.
Would that game have gone differently? Who knows?
But this is it. Like, they don't over-egg the pudding. And who knew I felt so passionately about the state of Scottish rugby? But I just...
How I feel about the state of Manchester United Football Club, at least up to recently. Like, why do I care so much about this? I really do care how bad they got because they were being so horrendously mismanaged. And I'm not entirely sure this isn't a false dawn, although that remains to be seen.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, getting back to Scotland.
No, but I think it's the same philosophy because I sort of sit there, and don't get me wrong, Scotland are always going to have the player pool problem in terms of producing strength and depth when compared to, say, a France or an England.
Of course.
But they do produce incredibly talented players, and therefore I think you need to utilise them. And when you do that, someone like Warren Gatland, maybe he's an even better example of what you can do if you manage the players at your disposal appropriately. You can achieve really great things, and Scotland just don't. And I think it's their own fault.
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned this a couple of times already. They've never won the Six Nations Championship since it began in the year 2000. They did win the very final Five Nations Championship, 1999, which we'll talk about, but only two teams haven't won the Six Nations, and the other one's Italy.
Yeah.
So that tells its own story.
I just think, I don't know, with Scotland, for me, they have like a very exaggerated version of the complex England have in respect of winning. Like, I think they always, they like, and I don't know if this is like, you know, sort of a pandemic psychological state of mind, but like they like being the underdog. They don't really think they're gonna win. They prefer it when they're trying to upset the apple cart, and they just never take the initiative. I think that's coming through a little bit with the frustration that's being expressed about like them beating England. The criticism is that that's the easiest game to get up for emotionally, and you always beat England at the moment, and they do
yeah.
But
last year was very much an
anomaly.
An anomaly, yeah, in recent years. I mean, they hadn't won a game at Twickenham for many, many years, from like the 80s all the way through to not that long ago. And now, God, they won however many recently, and they're virtually unbeatable at Murrayfield. And sometimes England snatch a draw, but it's crazy.
It is actually.
The difference. But they can't. They can't seem to do that across five matches of the Six Nations, and there's no reason historically that like they won more titles than Ireland going into the Six Nations period of the championship, a couple more than Ireland have won. But Ireland have won Grand Slams in the meantime and have won tournaments besides that. Are Ireland getting better than at a quicker rate than Scotland? Are Scotland lacking something that Ireland have? I don't understand why in the past 25 years Scotland haven't kept up, but Ireland have. Do you think of anything? Just a bad generation of players that they're getting out of now? Mindset?
Well, no, because Finn Russell's in his mid-30s. And
yeah, yeah, 33, I think.
I don't know. I think Ireland have done a better job domestically, and I think Scotland are slowly learning to take that lead because Glasgow and Edinburgh are quite strong now, which I don't think has always been the case. But
true.
Yeah, and it's a slightly smaller population, but I don't know, making excuses.
The Irish provincial sides were very, very strong in the early to sort of mid part of this century, 2000s, 2010s, Munster, Leinster, and the like. Very, very strong.
But yeah.
Maybe that's it.
But now Munster and Ulster are quite weak, but Leinster extremely strong. So
yeah.
So I guess that's the difference with the comparison that you can make is probably a better way of putting it with Ireland. I mean, your point though about like, okay, we've done a lot of whinging about them. Let's give them their flowers. You've made the point about the Calcutta Cup, and the Calcutta Cup is, if you're not going to win a tournament and you're Scottish, then the next best thing is to win the Calcutta Cup, surely. And
yeah, it's a hell of a consolation.
Yeah, they've been doing a damn good job of it, like you said. I mean, since 2018, mate, we've won it twice and drawn once, which was a Scotland hold.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And we've only won once at Murrayfield since 2016.
Which is
absolutely insane. I mean, and a lot of the games haven't been close. I mean, they've won 25-13. They've won 30-21, 31-20. There's been a couple of very close scores, to be fair, thrown in there, mainly at Twickenham, like 11-6.
Yeah.
They lost 16-15 last year, a one-point game. But yeah, they've been all over us, like a rash in the Calcutta Cup. So they can do it. Between they 19... can beat big sides, is the point.
Yeah. It was 1983 to 2021. They didn't win at Twickenham, and then they won back-to-back at Twickenham. After that, and it was only last year that we finally beat them again. So
yeah,
goes to show.
It does go, but I think that's probably the source of the frustration for the general Scotland armchair fan is that England are a good side, right? Like historically, traditionally, consistently. Like you can debate the strength relative to, you know, World Cups of this England side, but they're always they're always there or thereabouts. Like England are never really getting demolished by anyone. So if you've got our number, you're obviously pretty good and can produce, you know, big performances. No one else has dominated England like that recently, I don't think. We've had some wallopings off Ireland and France, not most recently, you know, last weekend, but in respect of Ireland. But the point is that Scotland have really had our number because they've got some really, really good players.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to that. Plus, as we say, there's no game they are more fired up than. And as we've said many times about England, when you're playing a very particular brand of rugby, which doesn't rely on passion, it relies on the mind and cerebralism and tactics and everything else. And another team just brings fire and passion to the table. And you can't match that. It's very hard to get a result, especially obviously if you get a early yellow card and then a red card later.
Well, yeah, that makes it doubly hard.
Doesn't help.
But yeah, I mean, look, we've been going in on them a little bit, and then trying to balance that against their Calcutta Cup record. Shall we talk about years gone by? What might have been had they beaten Italy, or what they might have been looking at replicating?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, We certainly should. I probably should say as well, it's because we care that we're doing this. Like it is very emotive to us, because as much as Scotland love winning those games, we bloody hate losing them. So I do care about the Scottish rugby team, even if it's in a slightly weird way, in the same way I care about Manchester United. So
yeah,
let's talk about the history.
When they were good. Well, yeah, okay. Like before we talk about when they were good, did you have anything you wanted to say about rugby in Scotland?
Yeah, I mean, I do like to go into the history of things, but there's not a huge amount really that interesting about the history of rugby in Scotland. It's basically just an extension of where the game in England came from, essentially, really. There's a few interesting things as well. Obviously, there's the traditional folk ball games that they play in Scotland as well. Towns and villages, same sort of thing that you get in the rest of the country. Early organised rugby is very heavily linked to schools and universities, very Protestant, very elitist, relatively speaking. the origins, which is, again, the same as the history of rugby in England, the same as the history of rugby in Ireland as well. It doesn't really differ in the same way that Wales does slightly, and France certainly does. But there's some interesting things. The oldest continuous rugby fixture in the world is in Scotland. That is Merchiston Castle School versus Edinburgh Academy, or former players of Edinburgh Academy, first played in 1858 and continues to be played to this very day.
Wow.
Which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
That is very, very long.
Traditions.
And obviously the ultimate bit of rugby history, the very first international rugby match took place in Edinburgh, 27th of March, 1871. And Scotland, of course, beat England that day in front of what was then a record crowd of about 4,000 people. So, you know, crowds have got bigger, but the, Scotland winning hasn't changed.
When was that?
1871.
Ah, that's so interesting. The Calcutta Cup didn't emerge for another 8 years then. 1879, first Calcutta Cup.
Yeah. It's also the first rugby game being a year before the first football game. Association football game, of course.
Mm. Also didn't know that the first Calcutta Cup was drawn, which is...
Fair enough. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, odd. But yeah, sorry, I interjected with the Calcutta Cup because I just assumed in my ignorance that the first game between England and Scotland was not just the oldest, but must have been the first edition of the Calcutta Cup. But I've learned something.
No, 1879, as you say. But that's obviously it's been the focal point ever since. And same as everyone else, they start playing in the home nations in 1883. They were also the main founding member of the International Rugby Football Board, which is now World Rugby, as continues to this day. In 1886, they founded it with Ireland and Wales, not England at the time, essentially because England had, they were in control of the game already. So it was Ireland, Scotland and Wales trying to take some control away from England, essentially, is the easiest way you can put it, in terms of administration and early lawmaking. But yeah, that's kind of it, really.
Yeah.
Got big roots in the Scottish borders as well. It's not just the elitist city boys. It is big all over the country, and the borders especially. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's pretty unremarkable because, like you say, it was homegrown. Not much of a story.
Yeah, I mean,
not much of a story.
Scotland was part of the United Kingdom. The reason every single first international game of these sports is England versus Scotland was because they were the first two countries to play it. And what better place to start than playing each other and Scotland winning.
Yeah. Well, Scotland winning is now going to be a feature of this episode because we promised we'd try and shine a positive light on some of their Six Nations performances. Where do we go first?
Five Nations performances.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well corrected. Where do you want to go? We've got two, 1990. In 1999.
We'll save the best till last. Let's go 1999 to start. We'll talk about 1990 a bit later.
Okay.
Not that they're not both great for Scottish rugby, of course, but it's all relative.
Yeah. Well, look, we've already given it the prelude, the final edition of the Five Nations 1999, and one of the most momentous weekends in Scottish sport, basically, and that's not an exaggeration, because Scotland don't often win international tournaments, but they did on this occasion. Spoiler alert. It was a pretty legendary side, led by the legendary. And that is, I mean, I don't want to keep using the word legendary, but this is very apt. The legendary Jim Telfer.
Yeah. I'm going to say you're going to use that word a lot when talking about some of these players, one in particular that we're going to come to.
Yeah, well, that's true. Captained by Gary Armstrong. But also contain the likes of Kenny Logan, who is the husband of...
Gabby Logan, course.
Yeah. Alan Tait, the aforementioned current Scotland head coach, Gregor Townsend, and the late, the great Doddy Weir.
Legendary Doddy Weir, I think you mean.
I tried to come up with a different one, a different superlative.
Pick any superlative you like.
Yeah. Doddy Weir. So it was pretty stacked. Telfer's men... they opened it up with a 17-point victory over Welsh in week one. The Welsh weren't good in the 90s, so, you know, not to downplay that, but probably the one that they would have expected to, well, probably a game they would have expected to get off to a good start in. And there is a reason that I'm downplaying the Welsh, which we'll
come to. I was going to say, it's good context, that.
Yeah.
Good bloody context.
Yeah, followed by a 3-point loss to the English at Twickenham, which we won't dwell on because we've done enough rubbing of salt into the wounds of inability to succeed. And then they went to the Irish. And again, the Irish, this is like an indifferent Irish side in the 90s. They were fine, Like, Ireland were kind of probably what Scotland are now, like a banana skin, but probably not to be relied on to win championships too often. A 17-point victory in Edinburgh. So that set up a finale that required Scotland to win in Paris and hope that Wales would somehow beat England.
Which, to be fair, at the time was about as likely as it is now, because this is on the back of France winning. I think they'd won back-to-back titles at this point the 2 years before.
Ooh.
France, if I remember rightly. So France were very good and Wales were not good. So it's about similar to how it would be now, having to go to Paris and win for Scotland and have England slip up against Wales. Just to give you context, can you guess what happened?
Well, let's start with how the Scots got on. So they five breathtaking tries in 27 breathless for first half minutes against France, and they set them up on their way to a 36-22 win. So they've done their job, and that is a very nice victory, as you say, away, not to be scoffed at all. But they're in the lap of the gods, and England were, in inverted commas, and you might remember this, away to Wales, but they were in actual fact playing in London. At Wembley, because the Millennium Stadium, now the Principality, was still being built.
So, yes, it's been 1999, and the Millennium Stadium not being quite ready yet, as you might guess from its name. But yeah.
Yeah. So
crazy.
That, like, yeah, very odd, which would probably make you think that gives England an even greater advantage, because they are, for all intents and purposes, playing at home. They were.
Basically. Yeah, about 3 miles away from where they normally play, yeah.
So, yeah, much fancied England. In fact, expected, arguably. And then despite that Scottish win, you would have still been thinking the trophy is heading to Twickenham. But Scott Gibbs decided, the very famous Scott Gibbs try, decided to upset that apple cart, along with some metronomic Neil Jenkins kicking.
I mean, the guy was a legend. The guy was probably one of my first players I really knew and loved in the sport of rugby, just on the back of the Lions tour, mostly, but also I guess this Five Nations would have been one of the earliest ones I'd have watched. But yeah, love Neil Jenkins. Not so much on this day.
No, not so much on this day. Same with Scott Gibbs, to be fair. He was a Lion. Yeah. Gibbs scores a one to try. Jenkins slots everything. Wales win 32-31. To hand Scotland the title on points difference, and obviously the honour of being the last ever champions, kings of the Five Nations.
I really do remember that. That's a very, I mean, obviously, again, we don't want to dwell on England, at least not in this episode. We will get to England. England will have their day, but it marks a series of traumatic events in my young England supporting life. This does that. You know, all came good in 2003 in several ways. But very, very do deeply remember this.
And I really remember this one as well. I guess that, like, that Gibbs try has been replayed over and over again.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Which probably helps. And it's probably also, the tournament is probably sort of refreshed in the mind, because obviously it was the last time Scotland won. So whenever there's any kind of preview about Scotland, it's also sort of recapped. And rightly so. But yeah, for some reason, it is one that really stands out by comparison. But the Scots haven't won one since. But this title, Jack, was their first title since 1990, full stop. And was it?
Yeah. Good way to bookend the 90s.
Which one was better? Well, over to you, I guess, if you want to talk about the 1990 tournament.
I think it has to be this one. I mean, okay. So first of all, Ian McGeachan. What can we say about Ian McGeachan? Legendary coach, Lions coach as well. Legendary Lions coach as well. Captained by Gary Armstrong, the team. Gavin and Scott Hastings in the team. And again, the legend that is Doddy Weir. The legendary Doddy Weir.
This is it. I was just going to quickly say, sorry for interrupting, because I know you didn't interrupt me.
No, please.
But Doddy Weir won two. So he won 1990 and 1999. But Armstrong captained them in both, which is pretty insane.
It's incredible. Honestly, it's incredible. Talk about longevity.
Mm.
But anyway, they opened up with a narrow away win in Ireland, 13 points to 10, followed up by a comfortable home win against France, who must have been bad at the time, 21-0. Not like France to not score. And then a narrow away win in Wales with a 13-9 win. So there you go. I don't have to tell you what the decider is going to be, given that setup. Who's left?
Yeah, that's a good setup. Wales got whitewashed, though. Funny.
I was going to say, yeah. Yeah, not a tournament to remember for Wales. Probably a proper low point of Welsh rugby. I mean, bear in mind as well, this is only 11 years after that 1979, the last of those four they won at the end of the 70s. So, yeah, crazy to think, actually, that 1990 was only 11 years after 1979. But anyway, it was.
So, England, Scotland.
I just about remember 1990, maybe. Maybe not. Anyway, getting off topic. Title decided at Murrayfield between Scotland and England. It was the third occasion after 1978 and 1984 on which two teams with three victories each faced off against each other in the final round. So it was a Grand Slam decider in every sense of the word. Both teams would win the Grand Slam with a victory. And also, the first time the Triple Crown had been at stake at the same time. As because England and Scotland obviously had already beaten the other home nations. So basically,
that is mad.
Between those two things and the Calcutta Cup, everything that either of the teams really care about was on the line on this day. And who won? Of course, this is a Scotland's episode, so we don't have to beat around the bush here. 13-7 to Scotland on the day. Victory over England to win the Grand Slam. Their first since 1984, and their third overall in the Five Nations, and their obviously most recent one to date, as I'm sure you could have guessed. Obviously, other than 99-9 that we've told you about, haven't won a title since, and they've not won a Grand Slam since either.
Yeah, it's just folklore stuff.
When will the next one come?
Folklore stuff, though.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like That team, the names, just the fact that it was McGeechan as well, like, it just adds to it, I think.
It gives me a happy feeling. I love that man. He's a legend. And I know we keep using that word.
Sometimes
happy
it's appropriate.
To keep using that word.
Yeah, sometimes it's appropriate, even if overused. But I guess what we could say, what's the nicest thing we could say about Scotland's inability to resummit the mountain, it's probably that when they do, it will be spectacular, because these two victories that we've spoken about, the most recent two, and obviously, like you said, the most recent slam, have been done in style. Like,
yeah,
whether it's dramatic endings because someone, England specifically, cock up at home effectively to a very understrength Wales side, or whether it's because you face the old enemy themselves in a showdown and you get it done. Like, either of those stories are like movie scripts.
Any time that it is Scotland winning at England's expense, it's got to feel 10 times better.
Yeah.
Both these occasions very much were. Obviously, nothing will ever beat 1990. Like, as you say, everything on the line on that final day at home at Murrayfield. Nothing will ever beat that. But, you know,
no,
1999 comes pretty close.
I agree. And like, when I said which one was better, I was just being a bit of a dope. Because there is, it's an obvious answer, really. But yeah, doing it at our expense twice, not once, but twice, must feel pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I was just having a quick look here whilst we were like, just because of the sparsity of the Scottish win. 84 was a dominant year for them, battered everyone, basically. England came fourth that year. France were the runners up. But then after that, after 1984, you've really got to go. 73 was a joint title.
Yeah.
64
Everyone won in 73, though.
Yeah.
Big asterisk on 1973.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was a joke. 64 was a shared title with Wales. And then you're getting into like 1938.
Yeah.
So, like, they barely ever won it outright post war.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, in fact, that's a
I was looking at the overall numbers.
That's a pretty damning indictment on Scottish rugby, actually.
Yeah. Because when I said before they had a better record than Ireland, I was obviously looking at the overall numbers, but it is very heavily skewed to the early days.
Yeah.
Where England and Scotland generally were obviously the two strongest teams. Or Wales as well. Should mention Wales in pockets as well. But yeah.
Yeah.
There's one more thing we should mention about 1990, which I'm annoyed I forgot to mention at the time, because I knew this. It was the first tournament where Flower of Scotland was sung as the anthem before the tournament.
Oh, nice. Oh,
as the national anthem. And obviously, it is undoubtedly now the Scottish national anthem. And I say in no small part, let's just say, because of this Grand Slam victory. And it's a hell of an anthem.
It's very good.
Like, all the Six Nations anthems are brilliant.
Except one.
Except God Save the King, which is a dreary, horrible tune by comparison. All the other anthems are great. I mean, Ireland, you can probably criticise.
It's not really an it's not really an anthem, the Irish.
What I should say is the combined anthem.
Yeah, Ireland's Call.
Yes, Soldier's Song is excellent.
But yeah, so like that's a good little bit of anecdotal factual stuff. Those two things contradict one another. Anyway, since then, not to end on a dreary note.
It's hard not to, though. Right, the Welsh episode.
It is hard not to. They've not been good. Like, they came last in 2004, 2007, 2012, and 2015. It's a toss-up between 07 and 15 as to which one was worse. There were home defeats to Italy in 2004, and they were a bit rubbish either side of that as well. So, probably 4. 2015 was amidst a pretty weird time, actually, because Scotland, France, and Italy all finished bottom. So, again, not at the same time, obviously. Sorry, that came out wrong. But you catch the drift.
That period of time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess they were at the peak. They hit the trough, and now they're somewhere like halfway up the bell curve. It's just a question of whether or not it's going to go back to a trough or the trajectory is going to remain on course for another peak.
It's just like I look at this Scottish team and think, if you can pull out five good games, like five games at your absolute best, which any professional sports team is capable of doing, they could, I mean, obviously notwithstanding coming up across France at their best, or even Ireland or England at their best, obviously that those two teams playing at their best maybe cancel each other out, or France, England, Ireland perhaps win. But them playing five games of their absolute best, there's no reason they can't win this tournament, or at least be there on the final day, or at least come second behind France at the moment. There's no reason they can't do it. Them at their best is good enough, comfortably good enough.
Oh, for sure.
Just they can't seem to get five good games in a row.
Consistency and mindset, he says, yeah. Not being an international rugby player. But, you know, like, I'm joking in part there. It's obviously very hard, and the things that impact a nation's ability to achieve success or its inability, you know, the things that undermine its objectives or what have you, are obviously multifaceted. But it is very difficult with the Scottish to not think that it starts and ends with mindset.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly, yeah, the talent is definitely there. They're certainly capable of achieving the level of mindset they need. Just only seems to be, as we say, once per tournament when the Calcutta Cup's at stake.
Yeah, when you hate the English.
Generally, yeah.
Can we mention one other guy, just in passing, before we end? Because we've mentioned some of the playing legends, yeah, like the Telfers, the McGeekins. We didn't mention Chris Patterson, but he was kind of like a Scottish Neil Jenkins.
I like Chris Patterson. I know who you're going to mention, and yes, you absolutely can mention him.
Bill McLaren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just love him.
Just a legend, mate. As a commentator, like, just one of a voice of rugby. I mean, Jonah Lomu rugby.
I was going to say, for that alone, Jonah Lomu rugby, the absolute, like, soundtrack of our childhood.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's some people when they go, you're just like, you just miss them, don't you? You just miss the sound.
Yeah.
And he died a while ago now. He died in 2010, and his good innings, age 86. But yeah, literally synonymous with my childhood and your childhood when it came to watching and listening to rugby.
I've said this about commentators before, like there's lots you can mention that once they are gone, it feels like a tremendous loss, but or at the same time, like, they're not ever really gone because they're so deeply ingrained with those great sporting moments or great things you remember fondly, like Joan Lomu rugby, for example. Their voice is so present in the moments, the memory you have of that moment, it's both very, very sad to know you're never going to hear anything new from that voice, but also, you know, they're always kind of there in the moment. It's
YouTube.
I don't know how else to describe it. Yeah. Yeah.
and montages. Never
more than a few clicks away.
A BBC montage with Bill McLaren never goes amiss. But yeah.
Legend.
Not quite, yeah, never a player or anything, like a journalist and a commentator and a former school teacher, but a worthy of a mention when it comes to Scottish rugby and rugby generally. I don't know, they would probably leave Scotland there.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, well, I mean, people have been watching the tournament, then they'll already know. When we were talking about talent, we've mentioned Russell, we mentioned Kinghorn, but Tuipulotu, Duan van der Merwe, Hugh Jones, one of my favourite players currently.
Yeah, yeah.
Ben White, to name but a few. And I'm only naming the backs because the forwards are the weak link.
Yeah, that's fair.
Can't win a line out.
Yeah, and they were outscored by Italy, which...
Yeah, yeah. Although that Italy scrum, yeah. Well, let's not talk too soon.
No, I'm not criticising Italy scrum. I'm not criticising, but it's why they lost. Or one of several reasons why they lost. Again, multifaceted, all these things, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was noticeable.
Twas. Well, you know, if the cards fall their way, it's still theoretically on, but the next two will really... really determine where Scotland finish. So we'll leave Scotland there. And we were saying, unexpectedly, we'll be discussing Ireland next because England fell into second place last year somehow.
Yeah, so obviously we're doing this in reverse order of where the teams finished last year. And I have my notes ready to go for Scotland and England this time, completely forgetting that by some sheer force of luck, England actually came second last year. So we are going to be doing Ireland next.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to that because Irish rugby stirs the passions as much as Scottish rugby does in me, even though I don't support either nation.
It does, yeah. And probably one of my, well, couple, but one in particular of my all-time favourite Six Nations moments involves Ireland, I would say.
Let's discuss it on the next one.
Looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, mate. See you soon.
See you shortly. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for our Six Nations series today. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. If you did and want to help out, a like, subscribe, comment or share would be amazing. But above all, tell a friend and spread the word. Thank you very much. Our theme tune is Oh Yeah by Harmony Productions. You can find us on Insta and Blue Sky at The Sporting Almanac. Or if you've got any ideas for future episodes or any good stories, drop us an email at sportingalmanacpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you for the next episode. We hope you enjoy the Six Nations until then. And don't forget, sport is nothing without the history that makes it. Goodbye.